The gurus of how to, Al and Larry Ubell, join me now. They are known in the business as accurate building inspectors of Brooklyn, New York, but we call them the gurus of how to.
I like that. I like it.
You like being called a guru?
Yes. In fact, I did a seminar at the New York City Bar Association, and sure enough, I was talking to someone else, and the person turns around and taps me on the shoulder. Are you on the radio? And I said, not necessarily.
No, I get that a lot too, but mostly in this building.
Well, that's when they want to make sure that they should let you in the building. right now we are going through a weather transition. I don't know whether that's something we want to talk about. And of course, we always have the quiz, your radio word game. We'll do that in a few moments. Before we get to it, are there certain things that you think are relevant to this very moment?
Very relevant, because you better start getting your heating your heating needs in order now, because in about a month, all the plumbers with expertise in heating, or all the heating contractors, are going to be extremely busy with all the equipment that's not working because they didn't do the due diligence that you're all going to do now because you're brilliant, because you listen to us. And so the things that people can do on their own is, like, on hot water systems, it'd be a great time to start bleeding the radiators and getting all the air out. Mm-hmm. On forced air systems, a great time to change the filter on the forced air system, especially if it's not an air conditioning unit, so you haven't used it all summer long, is a good time to change. And even if it is an air conditioning unit, change it now. I once neglected one of the filters on one of my forced air systems, and it was pretty disgusting, and it was actually slowing down the passage of air through the system. So it's really fundamental to change that, and it's important. And they're not that expensive to replace those filters.
Are air conditioners a way to get a lot of cold air into an apartment?
Well, it depends upon how the air conditioning works. You know, in other words, if it's a central heating system, a central air conditioning system, it really is not necessary.
Most people have window air conditioners.
But in the city of New York, that
sleeves.
Is. Yeah, out in the burbs, they have central systems.
But more and more now, they're installing ductless air conditioning systems in people's apartments, especially the surge of our real estate to convert from rentals to co-ops and condos, and those people who buy the condos, especially the pre-war buildings or the old townhouses, want some central air conditioning, so they'll put a ductless system in, manufactured by many brands. One of the most popular is Mitsubishi, but there are plenty of other brands out there.
What, a ductless system?
A ductless system.
I hear they're not what they're quacked up to be.
That's not entirely true.
Yes,
it's the tankless water heaters which we
can
talk about.
Okay, tankless, come on.
We get a lot of problems with the tankless water heaters, but people complain they put them in and they don't have enough hot water. That's the biggest problem. They don't produce it fast enough.
But anyway, getting back to what I was saying is that this is a time, if you have a steam system, to make sure that the low water cutoff is working. If you have one, you know what I'm talking about. And these are the times to do that. But if something's not working properly, what you want to do is actually put your heating system through a test and see if it actually works.
Well, I'll tell you. When I look at this time of the year, as far as you mentioned about plumbers and heating contractors, this is their harvest season. Mm-hmm. This is when they get all of the money.
This is their summer at the Hamptons.
And you got to realize that.
This is their Christmas.
That's right.
This is their Christmas.
And it
lasts for almost 6 months.
If most people were diligent and did it in the summertime, get their heating system ready, it would cost them a lot less money. But right now, if a guy has a listing that he has 20 calls in one day, and he said, well, if you want me to come over, you got to pay more and more and more. That's the name of the game.
Well, they just don't get to you, which is really the more – they don't usually – they charge premiums, but they just never get around to you. And especially, you know, if you're on the low end of that totem pole and you're not a big customer, or you don't own a lot of buildings, because a lot of these contractors like having multiple dwelling owners who own many buildings, management companies. And so those are the ones who get the service first, unfortunately. Yes. And the single residential owner is at the bottom of the totem pole, as they are with a lot of other situations.
We're going to go to our calls in just a moment. Also, people are writing into our comment page on our show page.
Yes, I looked it over. It's quite a few.
We have a phone number, 646-829-3985, if you want to speak to the gurus. But we also have this challenge that you throw out every time you come here. And this one looks like I never can guess whether we're going to get an answer immediately or whether we're going to stump everybody.
It is. I'm on the under over. I'm on the under here. I think this one's going to. I think someone's going to get this with like in three or four callers.
Yes, right. The question is, what is the name given to the principle of physics which enables the function of many types of pumps, atomizers, and car carburetors that can move liquid and gases and requires no internal moving parts? That's the most important consideration. No internal moving parts, and yet it's able to transfer air and gas and do all kinds of things. This principle is used for many chemical and manufacturing industries that need the control and control of materials that have a possibility of being contaminated. There's no moving parts, so there's no contamination.
Mm. And this is not something that's brand new. This has been around a while.
Yes, this is a concept that was discovered in the early 19th century, and it is an ingenious observation of what nature can do for you without doing anything.
So put your thinking caps on and give us a call at 646-829-3985, or call us with the kind of problems that we deal with when the gurus of how to are here. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate, and let's go to that first caller, Howard from Westfield, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Howard. Hi. What's up?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, I have been painting. Well, I've had my ceilings of my house painted inside, and the ceiling of my bedroom, and only my bedroom, starts to peel within a few months.
Well,
I can't figure out why.
Well, it's either now when it peels off, is it just the new paint that peels off, or is it peeling off in lots of layers?
Just the new paint.
Well, what is happening is many years ago, unfortunately, if the building is older than say 50 or 60 years.
How old is the building?
Maybe 40, 50 years.
About 50 years old. Yeah, in fact, 50 years. Many owners didn't want to spend the money to paint their house, so they use what they call is whitewash, which is really a lime solution in water, and mix it up and then just paint the ceilings and the walls. And that does not have good adhesion to the plaster or what was up there. And now you're putting another layer of paint on something that does not have a mechanical connection to what is already there, and that's why the paint starts to peel off.
What I would suggest here...
It's definitely sheetrock.
Oh, so he's... it's sheetrock. I think that what's happened is that you probably have someone utilized a kind of paint that is, you know, that is not compatible with the new paint. But what I would probably do is, I know this is very time-consuming, but I would actually sandpaper the entire ceiling, then paint it with, use some joint compound, patch wherever there's any imperfections, and then paint it with a layer of primer and then your finished layer of paint. But you really do have to sand everything up and scuff it up so the paint can bind to the material a lot better. And I think that's part of the problem. Or it could have been, I don't know what the use of the room was, prior to this,
bedroom,
but we don't know. You know, sometimes I have to tell you, I find situations where people have been smokers in rooms, and a layer of tar is on everything.
That's true. There's oil and
stuff like that. They burned a lot of candles.
A lot of candles, which puts paraffin in the air, and then sticks to, and then nothing's going to stick to that. So you might want to. I'm going to actually amend what I say. I would first like to see you actually wash the ceiling down with soap and water, and then sand it all up, and then start your new primer coat. I think that should work.
There are some painters that use a process called skim coating, where they can take the spackling compound and just skim over the surface and clean up everything, and then it works very well.
So then you're putting it on new plaster, in effect.
Yeah. Well, yes.
Yeah, but I would actually wash down the ceiling first.
That's paramount, yes. Yeah. Cleaning it up.
Okay.
Thank you so much for your call. We go now to Shirley from Queens. Hi, Shirley.
Hello, Shirley. What's up?
Yeah, hi. I have a question in my apartment, and when I dust the furniture and wash the floor, the dust is usually reddish. And I know that dust is kind of like grayish. I was wondering, why is my dust reddish?
It was
reddish.
Reddish?
Yeah. Actually, red in color.
Red in color.
That's a new one for me.
You have a lot of foliage around your house or something like that?
There's just it's in Queens. It's just a great big tree in the backyard.
But you know the funny thing is that the majority of dust that's in a house actually comes from us.
Yes, right.
It's a dying skin and hair and that sort of thing.
And the fabrics that you wear and stuff like that. Yes.
Less of that because most of that gets filtered out in the dryer.
It's on the bathroom floor, the foyer floor. It's on top of the furniture when I, wipe it off with a
What kind of heating system do you have?
It's an apartment building.
It's an apartment building.
It probably has radiator, either hot water or steam radiation.
You want to know something? That's an interesting question.
The experts.
Well, actually, what I would do is it's not actually about stumping us here. It's actually going the next level of investigation. And what I would probably do if we were really curious about what's going on there is I would take a sample of the dust and have it analyzed.
Sweep it up and have it analyzed.
And have it analyzed by a lab and see what they find inside the dust
that's
causing it to be red. And that's the next step I would take. So that I'm not sure what this is. It could. You don't have any pets, do you? Hello.
Not even a goldfish.
Not even a goldfish, but they don't shed very much. And you have plants around?
I have plants on the windowsills, but they're covered by curtains.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would have that would take.
I think we're analyzing the dust.
That's a puzzlement.
Yes, that's a puzzlement. But an analysis of the dust is what I would go with.
We thank you for your call. We have some people who've written in with questions.
Mm.
Tyler writes in, we live in an old building with hot water radiators controlled by the landlord. Our apartment gets uncomfortably hot, and we can't open our windows because we live on the first floor with windows facing the street. Is there anything we can do to lessen the amount of heat coming from that radiator?
Yes, you can.
And they said they shut off the radiators?
He didn't say he shuts off the radiators. But, he just says that he can't open the windows.
Well, okay. He can't open the windows, but how you can reduce the heat that comes out of a radiator is really get some what they call pad blanketing and just put a blanket over the radiator or block off the radiator in some way that reduces the amount of heat. Well, if it's a radiator, it's radiating the heat in a straight line. But if it's a convector, you can close off some of the convector sections of that radiator in order to reduce the amount of radiation from the radiator. That's
but here's one thing that you got to do. If this is a steam system, you could shut off the valve
that
feeds into the radiator, but once a month you have to open it back up again to let the water drain out because there's actually a little tiny hole in those valves that lets some steam in.
Yes.
And what happens is the water gets trapped in there. So once a month you got to open it up and let the water drain out and then close it back off again. But like my dad said, you want, if it's a convector radiator, close the grills up. If it's a cast iron radiator, cover it in a blanket. Do all the things that we tell you not to do to make pile your furniture around it, put books on top of it. Everything we tell you not to do to make it efficient, try to stifle the heat. That is a problem, especially with steam radiators, because they get so friggin' hot that it's very difficult.
Yeah, it's very difficult to control. Because there's no in between with steam radiators.
But even I find when you shut them off, the pipes are so hot that the heat radiates into the pipe, into the radiator from the pipe
from the metal itself
from conductivity. Conductivity, exactly. Yes.
Okay, we have some people who have answers to the quiz. Bill from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Bill.
Hi, Bill.
Hello, how are you?
What's up, Bill?
I think it's the Bernoulli principle.
That's close, but not it.
No. Not Bernoulli. I knew
okay,
Bernoulli.
Okay.
That was my radio name in Hartford.
Jordan from New York.
Hello.
What do you think it is?
What is it, Jordan?
Combustion?
No. But this does take place in some combustion-type boilers where they use the differential of air pressure to actually make it work better.
In fact, the chimney, the smoke that comes out of a chimney works from that principle
exactly.
Also.
Exactly.
Okay, well, let us try the first person who called. I've been holding off on him.
Mm-hmm.
Spinel from Manhattan. What do you think is, Spinel?
That's the Venturi principle.
How did you know that?
And pray tell, how do you know that?
Because he's just a brilliant NYC listener.
That's how they unload herring from boats. Through these big Venturi tubes.
That's right.
The fish.
That's true, too. And it's a really an interesting piece of equipment because it is used in not only in the drug making different drugs.
Actually, the pharmaceutical
The
drug business is in Mexico.
I'm sorry. Okay. Thank you for the correction. I love that.
Or in some trailers throughout the Midwest.
And they use it even.
Breaking Bad too, huh?
They use it in the process of skimming off cream from the milk and everything else. It's a really an interesting piece of invention.
And where does it get the name Venturi from? Giovanni Battista Venturi?
Yes. How did you know him? I didn't know that you were familiar.
No.
He's brilliant.
Exactly. Because that's what when people say, what's Leonard Lyon? I said, he knows everything.
Yes.
He was an Italian physicist, wasn't he, in the 19th century?
Very short guy. Yeah.
Well, listen, you got it right, Spinell.
Let me ask you a question. Hold on, Spinell, did you work in the herring business?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Just know about how they bring the herring in.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, hang on, and one of the producers
that's
will take your
question.
Pardon?
I said a ticklish question.
There you go. Anyway, one of the producers will take your name and address, and we'll send you a copy of Save Energy, Save Money by Alvin Ubell and George Merlis.
Okay.
Yep.
No problem. Putting you on hold now, and somebody will speak to you, and we will take a little break and come back with more about listener calls. Also, the comments that people have left on our show page at WNYC.org. My guests are the gurus of how-to, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York. And people can reach you at accuratebuilding.com.
That's right. In fact, we have a new little etching on our front page, if you want, on our homepage, where the people can punch on and write directly into our website, and we'll get it.
Oh, great. We'll be back with more right after this. We're back with the gurus of how-to, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell, also known as the Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York. And we're taking your calls at 646-829-3985. Or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And Joe from Flushing, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, hi, guys. I love this segment. I have a house with steam heating, mm-hmm. and as we just started the season, whenever the steam comes up, there's a knocking noise. I assume there's air in the system. How do you believe that?
It's not real. You're certain it's a steam system, right?
Absolutely. It's one pipe
okay.
of the radiator.
Then it's not. It's not. It's not bleeding air, because that's not how a single pipe steam system works. What you're hearing and the banging. It's banging or knocking.
It sounds like somebody's downstairs in the basement with a hammer.
Yeah, banging. What's happening is that you have to actually investigate the building and find specifically where that noise is the loudest. And what's happening is water is getting trapped in the pipe, and the live steam is coming in contact with the colder water. Usually it's a blockage. And what happens is the live steam causes the cooler water. When I mean cooler water, it's water that's probably about 160, 180, 190 degrees, but it's cooler than the steam, and the steam hits the water and causes the steam to boil, causes the water to boil in the pipe. So the banging is actually water boiling in the pipe. You don't want the water boiling in the pipe. You only want the water boiling in the boiler. So what's happening is either one of two things. Either your pipes aren't pitched properly, and that needs to be investigated, or water is being trapped in one of the radiators because the valve is either not all the way open or all the way closed. And like I said in the previous segment, that these valves, even if you close them, water, air, steam still gets through it, so you do have to drain the radiators from time to time. But it's actually pitching the radiators toward the valve, away from the vent, so the water drains properly, but making sure the valves are all the way open. I would give that a shot. If that doesn't work out, you can definitely contact me at my email, which is larry@ubell.com.
Now, we've gotten a lot of people writing in about similar problems. Steve in Brooklyn writes, ever since the steam, heat, and air co-op building was turned on for the season, the hot tap water in the building has become scalding around 140 to 150 degrees as opposed to 120 degrees before. Is this normal and is it safe?
No, it's not normal.
No, it's not safe.
It's not safe. It's not normal and it's not safe. The thing is that there's a lot of controls between the hot water, especially when they make hot water through the system, which I'm against. I'd rather see them have a separate system. But if you already have what is known as a heat exchanger or a coil inside the boiler, they also need what is known as a mixing valve, and it has to be very fine-tuned that the water coming out of that mixing valve should not be greater than 140, 150 degrees. Mm-hmm. That is really the limit for preventing somebody from getting a third-degree burn.
But let me explain what's happening with these people, and a lot of people have the same situation. There is an internal thermostat that when you're not making heat sets the water temperature in the boiler for only 120, 130 degrees. But once we get into steam season, now that internal temperature could be as high as 220 degrees because of the steam under pressure. And so what's happening is the water is now being superheated, and that is very unsafe. But the installation of a mixing valve, one of the most popular brands, which seems to work very well, is Hobie, and they've been around for a long time, and they've really been one of the great breakthroughs in hot water safety in the country and the world.
A listener in Bushwick says, I have a Weil McLean gas hot water boiler. It's 3 years old. It's controlled on each floor by an LED thermostat. Recently, I had to replace one of the thermostats, and it keeps giving an error message, change filter. Except as far as I know, the boiler has no filter.
Yes, that's it.
Because that thermostat was designed for both forced air systems and any other kind of system. The thermostat doesn't care what kind of system it is, but it's designed for all kinds of systems. The idea is that the wiring or the set points on that thermostat have to tell the thermostat that this is not a hot forced air system.
But some of them, a lot of them don't even have that option. It doesn't even know what kind of heating system it is. But there is somewhere in the thermostat, and especially if you go to the owner's manual, there's a place to reset that filter so it stops giving you that error message. And every now and then, you're going to have to reset that thing. I have it on one of my thermostats, but it can be
frustrating.
It can be, or you just ignore it.
Disregard
it because you don't have a filter.
But it does suggest something's going wrong, doesn't it?
No, not necessarily.
No, it's just trying to remind you to change the filter.
And that could also be on the specific thermostat. It could be on a time period. But in other words, how many hours the system has been running, and all of a sudden it clicks in. It's like oil changing on your on your automobile. How many miles you go? All right, it's time to change the oil.
But one of the things that's probably in the operating menu on the thermostat is what kind of system is it? It might actually ask, is it steam, hot water, or is it a forced air system? There might be that option, and if you can pick that would probably work.
Let's go to Toby from, where are you from? Manhattan. Hi, Toby.
Greenwich Village.
Ah, the Village. So what's up?
Well, a couple of months ago, I bought a used mini refrigerator. And I, now that the cold weather is here, I was thinking of getting a small electric heater, but I was concerned that I would overload the circuit. So I looked on the back of the refrigerator to see what the specifications were, and it lists voltage and hertz, but not wattage. And then I thought, well, maybe there's this sort of correlation. So I looked at other electrical appliances that I had to see that do list both things, wattage and voltage, and I can't find any correlation.
Well, here's the thing. Is there a thing that says amperage?
It does, yes.
And what does it say?
Input is 0.8 amps, and then it also has a refrigerant of 134 amps.
Oh, in other words, it has two. There are two motors. That means, in other words,
okay.
Or maybe it's separating the lighting part with
or the fans
with the fan motor. See, sometimes there could be two motors. There's a fan motor.
So anyway, what is it? What does it say?
But
what are the numbers?
It's 120 volts, 60 hertz, input 0.8 amps.
0.8 amps. And what's the other? What are the other amperage?
The refrigerant is 134 amps.
134 amps.
That can't be 134.
That actually
amps.
Might be a rock. A different. What I would love is because I would have to figure this out. Have you? I would actually get the name, the brand, and everything. Look up the specifications online, and it could probably tell you.
Well, that's
you.
What I try to do. It's Kenmore, but it says Sears Roebuck. Is Kenmore a brand of Sears Roebuck?
Yes. Yes, it is.
10 more is. Yeah. But what you can do is you can go onto our website, www.accuratebuilding.com, and write us, and it'll have a place to send us an email. Give us those specifications, and I'll write you back and tell you what you could do.
Okay, terrific. I have one other.
But wait, you got to include a phone number.
A phone number is very important for all those people.
Okay, go on.
What's the other question, quickly?
We have to move on, unfortunately, because we really can only allow one question per person. Isn't that mean of us? But so many people call.
Yes.
And we go now to Cindy from Manhattan. Hi, Cindy. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Cindy. What's up?
I'm thinking of buying. I'm an artist, and I have a studio out in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it has no heat, the place where I paint.
Yes.
Now, what do you think about these wood pellet stoves? Do you know anything about them?
Yeah, I do. A lot of them have – the problem with some of them are is that they have these automatic stokers and they have to, you know, put – you have to put in and make sure it operates. And they do tend to fail. You know, they stop working pretty early on. I mean, I think that you would – you know, I would have to – I don't come across many of them being in the city here.
Mm-hmm.
But I probably would tend – I would probably lend myself more toward coal because it's very inexpensive to get some coal. And these days, you actually can get one that actually burns pretty cleanly and efficiently, so you don't, like, turn the place into London during the 19th century. But those pellets, I've seen some of them work. I've seen I've taken classes on them, but I don't get to interact with them very often. But they do work, but they all have these automatic stokers, which sometimes fail. Do you have options for other heat sources?
Well, there's coal in the house that we live in.
Okay, and what about, but there's no gas or propane?
Oh, but there's baseboard heating, but it's all through oil, which we're trying to avoid.
Okay, because the other option is propane, which, you know, the propane company would be more than happy to, you know, help you install a tank on site, and that way you actually could use that, and propane is actually pretty effective in country environments, and you're probably not going to be keeping it that warm anyway, so I would go with propane, but the pellet thing, I really can't advise you yay or nay on that.
Thank you for your call. Anne in Westchester writes, my apartment has several older overhead light fixtures. The maximum incandescent bulb required is 60 to 75 watts. Since the new energy efficient bulbs burn much cooler, can I use higher wattage energy efficient bulbs to produce greater light?
Yes, you can do. In other words, if you have something that is a maximum of 60 watts, which is only about a little bit less than 6 amps or thereabouts.
Point six amps rather.
Mm-hmm. And if you take
about 0.5 amps.
And they give you the equivalent of how much wattage you get, but it also tells you what it's equivalent to. In other words, how much electricity you're doing, you know, they'll tell you very carefully that this is using the amount of energy of, say, a 40-watt bulb or a 60-watt bulb or something like that, but gives you much more lighting. And if it says this is a 60-watt bulb equivalent, you should use that.
Joe in Maplewood, New Jersey writes, I just purchased a home built in 1927 that has a 15-gallon tankless coil for hot water. The water stays hot in the kitchen sink and in the attic bathroom, but on the second floor shower, the water goes cold after 45 seconds.
Yeah.
Help.
Now, when you...
this is not a call, unfortunately.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I can't interview you about the question, right?
No. That's all the information I have.
The tankless... I'm not sure if he's talking about an internal coil or a tankless...
Maybe he should call you.
Maybe he should call me. Or at least email me with your telephone number because there's a couple more questions. But if this is a modern tankless water heater, a lot of times it deals with flow rate, and if you don't get the water running quickly enough, you might not get the heat. On the other hand, the lag on an internal coil can occur, and the temperature drops, and then it'll come back up. So I need to speak to Joe. Is that his name?
I forgot already.
Okay.
Gwen from New York. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Gwen.
I'm looking at a house in Bushwick, Brooklyn, that my husband and I want to buy. And
welcome to Brooklyn.
What's that?
Welcome to Brooklyn.
Thanks. Well, we already live here, and it's a great little house. It's very unusual. It's a single family. It's hard to find a house like this.
Yes.
And I really love it. It needs a lot of work, but my boyfriend's a little bit nervous about it because it doesn't have a basement. It's slightly below grade, but there's no basement, and the first floor, you just kind of walk right in, and it seems to be right on just a slab.
Right.
And there's no insulation in the floor or anything like that.
That's correct.
Well, actually, you don't need insulation in the floor because there's no heat loss going down. The heat loss is usually up and out, except if you have a crawl space. It depends upon the configuration. I would suggest hiring a home inspector to look over the building.
But the thing is that as far as that is concerned, because it doesn't have a basement, there are some drawbacks to not having a basement.
Well, you have boilers and other things in the apartment, don't you? Is that bad?
Yeah, well, that's part of the issue that your first floor is kind of almost a mixed-use kind of area. It's not only is it where you're living, but it's also where your mechanical equipment usually exists, such as your heating equipment, your electrical plumbing, and all that stuff comes in on the first floor. And everyone's at a needs storage space, so they always use these areas to store stuff, and that's kind of dangerous. But as far as the viability of the building, just because it doesn't have a basement, it's not a done deal that it's bad because of that. I've done a lot of inspections of buildings like that.
You can understand that the Levittown houses have no basement, and they built literally hundreds and hundreds of them, thousands really, and a lot of people love those houses. You know, they're really viable structures.
So we've just talked about no basement. Matt in West Orange, New Jersey asks, what's the best way to insulate an attic that's been converted into a bedroom? In ours, the knee walls are uninsulated and two small doors that lead to storage and crawl spaces. The rafters seem to be insulated, but it's drafting. Any ideas?
Well, first of all, the knee wall has to be insulated. That's an important thing. But the idea is to think about the area in which you are occupying that you want to keep warm. Is the insulation should be as close to that portion that you're going to live in. Putting insulation between the rafters that are in the, say, in the knee wall or cavity areas is just a waste of material. The concept is, would you take the blanket off your bed and put it on the ceiling to think you're going to keep it warm?
But the blanket has
to be around your body.
But you have to say exactly what you're trying to say here, which is you want the insulation next to the heated space. So if there's heat on one side, you're standing in the room, the other side of the wall needs to be insulated, not a wall two or three walls away.
That's exactly right.
So you need to insulate right next to the heated space. You want the blanket next to you, and you want your sweater next to you. You don't want your sweater hanging on the coat rack is not going to keep you warm. Same concept.
Oh, I can't get to the call, but a listener has a bird that's picking holes in its wood siding. Is there anything you can do to stop that?
Well, what they do is
it's cedar.
You have to have a person that knows how to deal with vertebrates that come and attack your house, and there are certain chemicals that act as a deterrent from going to the house.
We thank all of you who've called and written in, and apologize to all of you we couldn't get to. But you can send a question to Larry at larry@ubell.com,
right,
and include a phone number.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a lot of patience and can wait until December 8th, well, the Gurus of How To will be back on December 8th when
we could show all of America how to go forth and fix, save energy, money, and
do it safely.
Thank you so much.